And welcome back to the Hagmann Report. You know, we've got a great friend in Keith Hansen. Keith Hansen is the host and producer. He's First Look with Keith Hansen, which airs Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time in New Hampshire's Heritage FM Morning Drive and Talk Show. And then he's got the Keith Hansen Show, which airs from 9 to 10 a.m. the hour after that, hard-hitting political analysis and commentary, 99.7 FM WNTK New London, and 98.9 FM 1490 AM as well, WUVR Lebanon. He's got basically in the entire Northeast, behind occupied lines, behind enemy lines up there in the what I would call some pretty progressive country. Nonetheless, he's a beacon of truth up there. Momentarily, we're going to get to him. You know, I want to just state again, what in the world is going on with the special counsel, with the lack of Attorney General Jeff Sessions? And I hope to, you know, talk with this. We hope to talk with Keith Hansen about this. The fact that Donald Trump, in my view, in our view, is under attack every day. Have you ever seen a president, my goodness, under such assault since even before he stepped foot in the White House, being granted the keys, given the keys, figuratively speaking, to the front door of the White House? And that's the way it's been for the last 300 and some odd days. And we're seeing this just happen over and over again. So all of this combined, you've got this runaway independent counsel. Don't forget, it's not a special prosecutor, it's an independent counsel. You've got this false Russian narrative. You've got all of this lawlessness taking place all over the nation that's not being addressed by Jeff Sessions, who, again, I want to say on my personal Twitter feed, I put up a milk carton, picture of a milk carton with Jeff Sessions' picture on it, because that's the way I feel. And the swamp is much deeper. And speaking, a man who has been speaking about the swamp, who understands that very issue and other issues as well, as Keith Hansen. Let's bring on Keith Hansen. Keith, welcome to the Hagmann Report. It's been a while.
Hey, Doug, how are you?
Fantastic. Joe's here with me as well. And
Joe, how are you?
Yeah.
So, great to hear from you, Keith.
Good to be here. Man. Good to be here. Great way to spend a Friday evening.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate it. And, tell people your program, and I love your program. By the way, you get 4 hours of radio every morning up there in the Northeast, right?
Yeah, imagine having to fill 4 hours every single morning with intelligent dialogue, and to get paid for it on top of it. It's like a dream come true. It's better than therapy. It really is. Instead of having to pay a therapist, I actually, it's therapeutic for me. No, it's a real privilege. And it's funny that you say behind enemy lines. Up where we are, I mean, you know, we're in New Hampshire, and we're just a stone's throw away from Vermont. And just the contrast between New Hampshire and Vermont. New Hampshire is still, it is the live free or die state. And in certain respects, I think people really hold that that mantra to be somewhat sacred. Thank God we're not in the Democratic People's Republic of Massachusetts, because that you want to talk about a cesspool down there. Look at what Massachusetts has and has produced. You've got Elizabeth Warren down there. You've got Ted Kennedy. I mean, it's Ted Kennedy territory down there. John Kerry. The list just goes on and on and on of progressives. And it's kind of ironic that Massachusetts is the birthplace of the American Revolution, and look what it's become today.
Absolutely.
Well, so speaking of revolutions, we've got to get your take on, and we can go anywhere you want to go, but I'm just interested in finding out your take on, starting tomorrow. You know, these mopes took out this full page ad,
yeah.
Full page ad in the New York Times. What's your take on this communist revolution type of planning that's taking place. People either if people want to hype it up or understate it, and I think it's, I mean, I think we should take it seriously. But what's your take on this?
I think depending on where you are, if you're one of the in the major metropolitan cities that leans very liberal, very progressive, very democratic, then I would probably be watching. Watching things a little bit more closely if I were in Berkeley or LA or Chicago or something like that. I mean, I think what you're going to see is you're going to see a couple of pockets of these idiots that are, going to try to do whatever they're going to try to do. It's, very, very similar to a small child who's just not getting enough attention and they throw a temper tantrum and sooner or later mom and dad has to deal with it. Hopefully it's with a good swift kick to the tuchus and, they're off to bed and, they lose their playground privileges for the next day. The funny thing here, Doug, is when you look at these people, they don't have any concept of what it is they want. They have no concept of what it is that they're espousing, the socialism, the communism. And I mean, it goes well beyond that. You're looking at a group of people that really for the bulk of their lives, all they've known is Barack Obama. I mean, for their socially and politically conscious lives. I don't know of too many 5, 6, 7 year olds that are politically and socially aware unless they're simply regurgitating what mom and dad say or what they happen to hear from the adults. That being said, most of the time people don't really start to come into their own sense of political and social awareness really until probably 12 years old, 13 years old. So when you look at these millennials and the college kids, you're looking at a group of people that by and large, the reality that they've known up until this point has been Barack Obama, has been a liberal, progressive ideology and an agenda that's been pushed forth by not only Obama but the rest of his administration and his sycophants. And so, and you also marry that with the concept, you and I, we were talking about this the other day. If you were looking to move out of Pennsylvania, you wanted to move to another state. Let's say you were going to move, you were thinking about moving to Texas, or you were thinking about moving to Florida. Well, as a critically thinking, responsible adult, you would probably make a list. Most people would say, well, make a list. Come up with the pros and the cons. And so you would sit there, okay, here's my list for Texas. Here are all the pros about moving to Texas. Here are all the things that aren't so good about moving to Texas. And you'd do the same thing with Florida. And then you would go through and you would compare and contrast all of the different points. And, right. This is in keeping with what I used to teach you. As you know, I ran several juvenile impact incarceration programs, juvenile boot camp programs. And one of the things that we used to teach our kids in these impact incarceration programs, and mind you, these were kids who were adjudicated felons. They had already been declared as delinquents by the state, and now they're literally in a boot camp program. And one of the things that we would teach these kids is the steps of decision making. We called it the SKEEA model, S-K-E-E-A. And it's very simple. It's an acronym for see the situation clearly, know what you want, expand your possibilities. That means look for different options, evaluate and decide, and then act decisively. I mean, it's a very simple roadmap to making a simple decision. You and I and your listeners do this every single day. We just don't realize we're doing it, but we tend to do that. We formulate a general understanding of what the problem is or what it is that we want. And then we look at the different options. And then we compare and contrast those different options. We select the best one, which is going to advance whatever our goal or agenda is. And then we act decisively and we stick to that decision. But when you're not taught critical thinking skills, when you're not taught how to compare and contrast, when you're not taught how to weigh options and see the good and the bad, when you're not taught to argue both sides of the argument. If I asked you to argue the gun control debate from the standpoint, from the position of a liberal progressive, I would feel very confident that you could certainly do that, playing devil's advocate, as could I, as could Joe, as could many of your listeners. But when you're not taught how to look at both sides of a picture or both sides of an argument or a viewpoint and compare and contrast and then make a decision based upon what you feel is best, based upon what it is that you're hoping to achieve, well, now you're automatically operating at a deficit. combine that with the fact that in government-run schools, people like to call them public schools, but let's call them what they really are. They're government-run schools. And so when you have liberal progressive educators within the government-run schools that don't teach kids to compare and contrast. Hey, these are the tenets of socialism. These are the tenets of a free market capitalist society. Let's do a project where we compare and contrast good points and bad points and tell us which one would advance the personal or the private agenda in the United States of America. They would never do that. And they don't do that because to do that would expose the truth behind their agenda. And the truth of the matter is that there's nothing that a liberal progressive is trying to advance or trying to put into the mind of a child that actually advances the individual. All it does is indoctrinate thoroughly and brainwash, and then by not teaching children how to compare and contrast, how to think critically, they remove the ability for that child to ever have to go through that process. It's similar to what the Holy Roman Empire did. Only the educated people spoke Latin. Everybody else spoke whatever language they happened to speak. So if you could never speak the educated language, the language of the rulers and the people who are making the decisions, there was no way you could ever operate on a level or a plane that was equal to them. Similarly, if you don't teach kids how to compare and contrast and look at various viewpoints and to think critically, then what you're doing is you're indoctrinating them and you're cementing them in that indoctrination and virtually guaranteeing that they'll never be able to compare and contrast to the point where they'll see the benefits of what they haven't been taught and the truths about the fallacies about what they have been taught.
Very true and very well stated. Okay.
Thank you.
Wow. Yeah.
There's a concept called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Dunning-Kruger effect is a cognitive bias, where people who are, you know, you've done firearms training programs with me. And so right. When we talk about people in the firearms training world, we talk about four different types of competency. Some of your listeners probably have heard this before. There's the first stage is unconscious incompetence. That's where you're too stupid to know you don't know anything. And then the opposite end of the spectrum is the unconscious competence. That's where you're competent, where you don't even have to think about it because it's just part of what you do. A seasoned firearms operator, for instance, can smoothly draw a firearm and get some shots off and reholster and not even think about it. They could virtually do it via an automated muscle process because they've rehearsed that so many times, maintaining the safety aspect, so on and so forth. So therein lies the unconscious competence. Again, the polar opposite, the furthest end of the spectrum from that, is the unconscious incompetence. And so when you look at people who are unconsciously incompetent, they're too stupid to know that they don't know anything. Oftentimes, they overstate their own abilities. If you ask a person who doesn't know anything, chances are they're going to assert that they know everything. And the person who is actually very knowledgeable, very skilled, very adept, tends to understate their own abilities. And this is something that has been proven through a number of clinical psychological tests. And so when you combine the Dunning-Kruger effect, where people who don't know anything think that they know things, that's where you start to get into a dangerous situation because people are going out and trying to violently defend what their assertions are, which are really based on their opinion. And I'll take it one step further. I'm working on a book on this, and it involves the Dunning-Kruger effect, and it also takes the standpoint of Plato's Allegory of the Cave. The seventh book of Plato's Republic, the Allegory of the Cave, involves a story, a parable that Plato wrote to explain to philosophers of the time why they had a tendency to kind of die or get beaten or get abused or get murdered. Because what does a philosopher do? A philosopher challenges a person's perspective on reality. And in the parable of the cave, or the allegory of the cave, there's a generation, multiple generations actually, of slaves that from birth have been chained up inside of a cave. It's not a deep cave. I mean, there's light that's coming in from the outside. But their backs are to the opening of the cave, and they're looking at the back wall of the cave, where all they see are shadows, and all they hear are echoes. And so over time, their perception of reality is the shadows that they see and the echoes that they hear. Well, one day, one slave manages to free himself and runs out of the cave. And, of course, now that he's in daylight, but he's spent his entire existence in darkness. I mean, think about the metaphors that are right there. He's blinded by the sun, the sunlight that's outside of the cave. Slowly, his eyes begin to adjust to the light, and he suddenly realizes now that these shadows, he's looking on the ground and he's seeing the shadows, which he's always looked at as being reality. But now he sees the tree, or the horse, or the rock that causes that shadow, and realizes that the sun really is the ultimate source of all knowledge and wisdom, because the sunlight casts its rays upon the earth, and then things that are on the earth, of course, cast shadows. So very eager to share this newfound information with the other slaves, he runs back into the cave, sets them free, and explains to them, everything that you have ever seen on this back wall isn't real. Reality is outside. Well, of course, they beat him up, they assault him, and they kill him, because their perception of reality has been challenged. Now, how does this relate to Antifa and all of these millennials that are out there rioting? Well, have you ever tried to actually have an intelligent conversation with one of these liberal progressives, one of these Antifa members? You can't do it. They break down into a violent anxiety mess. So let's look at what we've just talked about. You aren't taught how to critically think. You're not taught how to compare and contrast. And you're taught that one way of thinking is the truth and everything else is a lie. Now, you have a conservative, a Republican, a free market capitalist, a libertarian, somebody who espouses viewpoints, social political viewpoints, opposite of what the Antifa, the liberal progressive socialist, possesses. And the conservative, the Republican, the libertarian, the free market capitalist is able to engage them in dialogue that they themselves can't engage in because they lack the ability to compare and contrast and have that intelligent discussion. And so what happens? Think about a person, think about a little kid who has anxiety issues. How does that anxiety issue manifest? Generally with a physical outburst, because they're feeling these feelings that they don't know where to put. They can't get rid of it. They just know, I'm getting beaten up, not literally, but figuratively. And most of these people, they have college degrees. And they've also been taught that if you have a bachelor's degree or if you have a master's degree, you are literally a better person. You are smarter, you are more competent, you are more valuable to society, and the person that doesn't have the college degree or that you perceive to be a lesser educated through book knowledge person, this is a lesser person. So now you have anxiety that is building because this person who's supposed to be so smart that has all the answers hasn't been equipped with the critical thinking skills, with the ability to compare and contrast. They can't articulate themselves because they can't fathom a viewpoint opposite or contrarian to what it is that they've been taught to be reality. And so what happens? They have a meltdown. That's why you can't talk to these people. They're just going to get violent on you.
Absolutely right. And
yeah,
this is, what is it, from a lack of being able to articulate their own thoughts and feelings? Is it because their own thoughts and feelings are just so filled with lies and untruths, or just based on emotions, that this is the way they react?
Well, no, I think, well, if I, I don't mean to jump
well, that's
here,
no, that's partially, I think that's partially correct. Because they can't keep up, and they're literally being clobbered. You're making sense to them, but they can't argue your viewpoint. They can't refute the central point of your argument. So, I mean, think about Graham's hierarchy of disagreement. It's a great little roadmap of how people disagree. You know, refutation of fact, refuting the central point of an argument, is one of the cornerstones of an intelligent debate and discussion. What are the three lowest rungs on Graham's hierarchy of disagreement? You've got name-calling, ad hominem attacks, and tone response. And so that is the intellectual, that is the low-hanging fruit for the intellectually impotent, because they don't have information that could refute your viewpoint. They can't go point for point with you. All they can do is attack your tone, name call, and engage in ad hominem attacks. And you see that all the time. I mean, you know, you and I have talked about, you know, both of you, we've talked about this on your show before, about the sin factor, the shift, ignore, and name call. That's basically what it is. How does a liberal argue? They shift the facts, they shift the argument, they ignore the facts, and when all else fails, they resort to the last act of a desperate scoundrel, which is to call somebody a name. You know, and this is the thing. It used to be, well, you know, I like Barack Obama, okay? I don't like Barack Obama. Okay, well, that's very interesting. Why don't you like Barack Obama? Point, point, point. Okay? And then the other person makes counterpoint, counterpoint, counterpoint. Well, today, the new mantra in debating with a liberal, debating with a progressive, debating with one of these Antifa people is point, counterpoint, I'm offended. I like Barack Obama. I don't like Barack Obama because I don't like his economic or his social policies. I can't argue this. I can't argue this. You're just a racist. That's what it boils
down to. Sounds right.
Nailed it. You nailed it. Wow.
And Keith, what you were saying earlier about looking at both sides of an argument, obviously these people are unable to, not they can't put themselves in, you know, on either side. They can't even look at the other side of the argument. Were you saying earlier with that the people who are able to look at both sides of an argument are more able to debate other people, have more intelligence when looking at situations versus?
I wouldn't necessarily say it's more intelligence. Obviously, they're better equipped to have an intelligent, logical discussion because they can look at a point and they can offer a counterpoint. They can refute the central point or the central theme of the oppositional party's argument and make a cogent, succinct, well-spoken argument for themselves. If I were to ask either one of you to have a gun control debate, but argue it from the position of a person who wants to see gun control, who wants to see firearms confiscated, it would probably be uncomfortable territory for you to venture into. But I'd be willing to bet you could do it and do a pretty decent job of it. In fact, oftentimes when you take a formal debate class, that's one of the things you have to do. Flip a coin and you're either, here's the topic, abortion. Flip the coin, heads, you're pro, tails, you're con. And you have to be able to argue both sides of the argument. But those things aren't being taught today. Today, it's just, this is socialism. This is what the Democrat Party stands for. This is what the Republican Party stands for. Republicans are bad because they're the party of rich, old, evil white people who are slave owners. They want to take everything away from you. They want to control you. And the Democrats are good because they want to make sure that everybody is tucked into bed at night with free health care and free college for everybody, and everybody gets free stuff, and they're never taught the economic principles of that. They're never taught that there's no such thing as a free lunch. They're just coddled, and the Democrat Party is presented to them as a party that cares about the people. They're the big-hearted Democrats, but the Republicans are the evil people. And so when you look at Barack Obama, and you look at the millennials, so these millennials, these college kids, for the majority of their conscious social and political lives, all they've known is Barack Obama. And they're told that Republicans are bad, Republicans are bad, Republicans are bad, and now all of a sudden, you've got a Republican in the office, somebody as bold and brash and gregarious as Donald Trump, and what is this? Now, clearly, this is the Antichrist, because this is exactly what our educators, our professors have warned us about. And we don't question professors, we don't question educators, because, well, they're the learned class, you know, and so we don't question them. But even if we wanted to question them, have we really been given the tools to be able to question them? And that's also a part of the educational system, guys, because, you know, again, it used to be in a college, in a university, in a body of higher learning, people were encouraged to go out and seek alternate viewpoints, expand their possibilities, if you will, and then compare and contrast all of those different options and make a decision for themselves. I mean, critical thinking was encouraged. Critical thinking was taught. Critical thinking and decision-making and comparing and contrasting is completely antithetical when you're trying to indoctrinate somebody. Because if you equip them with that skill, with that ability, you're running the likelihood that they're going to point out flaws in your argument, your flaws in your agenda. It doesn't work for them. So we're just going to make sure that the people we're indoctrinating never have the ability to question.
Apply what you're saying, if you don't mind, to the media, the liberal progressive media that we're seeing, whether it's Chris Matthews or whoever, Tom Brokaw, apply that to the older statesman media. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. No, I get it, and that's I think that's one of that's one of the questions that's been pondered for hours and hours and hours, and why is it that these people espouse? You know, I think really when you look at the media, you really have to look at why people do certain things. Why does the media do what it does? Why do super, very, very wealthy, very, very successful people, knowing what they know about the free market system and capitalism, why do they continue to back politicians who stand in stark contrast to the very economic principles that allowed them to gain such wealth in this country? I think it's because they realize that there is an inevitable slope towards the progressive movement. Whether you like it or not, I'm certainly as far from a progressive as you could possibly get. But I look at it and I say, I think that most people look at it and say, it's inevitable that this is going to wind up coming. And so, why would I vote for, I didn't, of course, but I'm using this as a hypothetical. Why would I vote for Hillary? Well, if I'm a politician or if I'm a person of social prominence, I'm probably going to want to, I'm probably going to want to have a president in my back pocket. And so influence and status. Hey, I voted for you and I put $2 million into your campaign. So if I have a problem, if I have an issue, I can just pick up the phone and I have a direct pipeline into the White House. I've bought myself influence. I've bought myself a degree of power, if you will. Super uber wealthy people like Bill Gates and Mark Cuban and the rest of them. Well, you know, if they're voting for and supporting the person that they firmly believe is going to wind up at the helm of this country, then it would make sense because, well, when I need a favor, you know, yeah, they're going to write laws. They're going to write tax laws. They're going to do tax breaks that are going to benefit me. Access to powerful politicians is a powerful motivator. And I think the ability to access or the ability to have influence or the ability to reach out. I mean, everybody wants to say, hey, you know, I've got somebody famous on my speed dial. You know, I heard somebody the other day, they were talking about, you know, Sean Hannity, and they said, oh, I was having a conversation with Sean the other day. It's like, oh, so you called his talk show. You weren't having a personal conversation with Sean, but that was the impression that this person wanted to give. Like, oh, Sean's a buddy of mine. Like, I can pick up my cell phone and, you know, I could call him the way I could pick up the cell phone and I could call you or Joe.
Right.
You know, and so that's a level of access that a lot of people don't have.
I get it.
And so the ability to have the access, the ability to have the influence, and I think with the media, I think, you know, the more we cozy up, and here's the thing, in the media, in the news, a breaking story is gold. If you can be the person to break the story, if you have the political connections, if you have the influence, if you're the person that the president is going to go to first for an interview, that increases your marketability. And so I think by lending a sympathetic platform to liberal progressives, the individuals and the party that I believe the media sees as the inevitable ruling class in this country, they make sure that by pandering to these people and by giving these people what they want, then when it's payback time, they're going to be getting the choice pickings, if you will.
Okay. And that frames it nicely. Wow. Okay. Very good.
I mean, I could be way off on that, guys, but I mean, that's just the way that I look at it. I mean, having attended the DNC, having attended the RNC, watching the way that the media grovels at the feet of these people, they are so desperate to have access to them. They want to be the one, you know, in the White House press pool. I've been in the White House press briefing room a couple of times, you know, and there's something to be said about having, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, knowing your first name and calling on you and saying, Keith, you have a question. Not that she didn't do that with me, but, you know, people that are in the White House press briefing room. I've been right in the press briefing room a total of three times. But, you know, but to have that level of recognition, to have that, you know, one or two degrees of separation from very, very powerful people can do wonderful things for your career, can do wonderful things for your bank account, And how do you maintain that? You don't maintain that level of connectivity and influence by going against what you believe is going to be the inevitable ruling party. Unless you're like me and just enjoy pissing people off, which I love doing. That's why I do what I do, where I do it. And, you know, it's great.
And
I mean,
and you're good at it.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.
You're very good at it. And I mean that as a compliment, not as an insult, but by any stretch of the imagination. Our guest is Keith Hansen. His Twitter account, Real Keith Hansen, at Real Keith Hansen on his personal Twitter. And of course, at WNTK997 for his radio Twitter account. And of course,
That's the radio news Twitter. My Twitter. Yeah, my Twitter is at Real Keith Hansen, and the radio station's Twitter is at 997WNTK. But that one's pretty boring. You're just going to basically get press blastings out of out of the Dartmouth-Sunapee region of New Hampshire and Vermont. So
I'm on your personal Twitter account. I would urge everyone to follow Keith Hansen on Twitter as well as Facebook. And you know, Keith, you're one of the few people that to me. As a talk show host, you bring so much to the table, given your experience, given your background, and the intellectual discussion we didn't engage in this. We just listened to this. This is fabulous. But when's your book coming out? I got to ask you.
that's a good question. It went
Or is it too early to ask?
Well, it's too early to ask because it went from about a 40,000-page manuscript. I'm up to about 78,000 words right now, and I'm not done because every time I wind up working on another section, there's something else that comes up, and I want to go back and edit and all this. So I don't know. Eventually my editor is going to wind up screaming at me here, and I'm probably going to have to shave some stuff down. But no, the bottom line is that this really stems from a very in-depth examination into why everything just went to hell in a handbasket following Donald Trump's election, going up to the election, and then immediately afterwards with the inauguration, and then from there. And I got to be honest with you. You know, you asked about the Antifa thing. You know, I really figured if Donald Trump wound up winning the presidency, there'd be a little bit of civil disobedience and discourse, but things would settle down and people would really, really look forward to economic growth. I don't know if you saw the report today or not, but the unemployment rate, now granted it's the unemployment rate, it's not the it's not, you know, really the true number, the workforce participation number. But still, I mean, we're at numbers that we haven't seen since 2000. The economy adds, 264,000 jobs in the month of October. The stock market is teetering on 24,000 points. There is consumer confidence up the wazoo. People are very, very confident about this president and the economic agenda. Now you've got the tax plan that came out, and there's some really, really good things. There's some things I would like to see, but all in all, it's a great start. Keep in mind that this is the first of four that are going to be released. I think people are looking at this president. I think people who are, again, critically thinking, pragmatic, responsible adults are looking at this president and saying, you know, we could really have some good times here in this country with this guy. But I have to say, I mean, I think we are closer to the brink of some real nasty outbreaks in this country than we ever were under Barack Obama. And the reason for this is very simple, that by and large, people on our side of the argument, on our side of the aisle, tend to be guided and, more importantly, constrained by a sense of responsibility, civic and legal responsibility, a sense of morality, a sense of ethics. We don't go around doing those things. We don't go around beating people up. We don't go around utilizing fascist tactics to try to silence people who we disagree with. Again, we have a healthy understanding of morality and ethics, and we are largely constrained by that understanding. You're seeing an ever-increasing population right now that has no morals, that has no ethics, has no understanding of civil or social or of civic responsibility, and they have absolutely no problem going out and using violence to silence people that they stand opposed to. And it's a frightening thing. People talk about civil war. I don't think we're going to have a civil war in this country. Because to be honest with you, let's be frank about this. There's 300 million guns in our country. Most of the guns and most of the ammo, that's on our side of the aisle. you're talking about people who want to launch a civil war who can't figure out what freaking bathroom to use. I'm really not too concerned about it.
Yeah,
but I think what you're going to do is, I think you're going to see more of a situation where you're going to have the vandalism, the destruction of public statues. You're going to have all of these things, and I think
easy.
It's really a situation where people, it's going to be more of like an insurgency than anything else. They're not going to go head to head, toe to toe, in lined up battalions, because they're going to get absolutely trounced. They're going to get they're going to get slaughtered. They're going to wind up crying to mommy in the basement. But I think what'll happen is that they'll launch attacks in areas where they think that they can get away with it, or in areas that really have strict gun control measures. Because I'm not worried about it happening up here. We've got constitutional carry up here. We've got open carry. You can walk around with an AR-15 slung over your shoulder, and ain't nobody going to give you a second look. So the likelihood of Antifa, trying to really assert itself and ass up here in New Hampshire, slim to none, because the first person that decides to get physically violent is probably going to wind up having their head turned into a nice little ball of red mist. And that serves as a pretty powerful deterrent for anybody else that happens to be within eyeshot of that.
I just happened to see a poll that was taken. In fact, it was in the Washington Examiner. 8 in 10 gun owners ready to kill if they feel threatened. And I thought that was really interesting. And of course, as you said, the gun owners are on our side, or the conservative side. Not too many of the snowflake people are out there.
300 million, and people talk about, lawful gun owners being the problem. It's a bumper sticker saying, but, with what, 2 trillion rounds of ammunition and 300 million guns, if lawful, responsible gun owners were the problem, you'd know it.
Exactly.
We're not the issue. But, that does bring me up to another subject that I have to talk to you about. I've started 2 new organizations. I was hoping to get you behind this because, quite frankly, I'm upset. I'm unnerved, and I feel the need to get involved. And so I've started 2 new organizations. I don't know if you got to take a commercial break or not, or if we're good to
roll. No, because it's you, we told the network, so we're not going to take any network breaks. We're just going to go roll right through and give you the floor. So you got it, brother.
All right. Well, this is what we need to do. Obviously, you know what happened in New York City with the truck attack. 8 people killed, 11 people injured, and this was done by a rental pickup truck from the Home Depot. So I am here today to implore your listeners to stand behind me, to stand with me, to join hands, and to raise our voices to demand common sense motor vehicle control from our legislators. We need to petition Washington. And to do this, I've started 2 organizations, Every Town for Motor Vehicle Safety and Moms Demand Bicycles. And what we need to do is have common sense motor vehicle control. This is what I'm asking for, Doug. I want to see comprehensive background checks for motor vehicle purchases. Moreover, I want to see a 3-day waiting period, a cool-down period, if you will, so a person who potentially has homicidal intent in purchasing a motor vehicle to mow down innocent people, well, that could quite likely be prevented if we just gave people an opportunity to think about their decisions before they did them. And I believe that that 3-day waiting period would certainly help that. Plus, a comprehensive background check for anybody seeking to purchase a motor vehicle, I think, is absolutely critical to helping to identify potential terrorists in the making.
Solved. Yeah.
And there is this problem called the car rental loophole. And we have to clear this. Do you realize that anybody across this country from sea to shining sea can walk into a motor vehicle rental office and rent one of these deadly weapons? You're not even required to have insurance. Insurance, Doug and Joe, is optional.
No.
Anybody can walk into, and you know what? Here's the most egregious things. These purveyors of death machines are located oftentimes in airport parking lots. That's right. You can get off of a plane and you can go and rent one of these deadly assault vehicles, because that's really what they are. I mean, think about this. Who needs a vehicle with 450 horsepower?
Or fully automatic.
Can't you? Well, it is a full, I mean, a fully automatic transmission, Doug.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, you know, the semi-automatic standard transmissions are certainly going to allow people to get from point A to point B. But that brings me up to another point. You know, this individual had a Florida driver's, I'm not going to use his name because I'm not going to give him the dignity after what he did.
Amen.
This individual had a Florida driver's license, went to New Jersey, rented a vehicle in New Jersey, and then drove that vehicle to New York. So there's two ways that we can prevent this. Number one, we have to eliminate national driver's license reciprocity. You should have a license in the state that you are in. So he should, and this would have prevented this. If we eliminated national driver's license reciprocity, he never would have been able to rent that death machine in New Jersey and then drive it across state lines into New York. And further to that point, I think we need to restrict gas tanks to 10 gallons or less, because nobody needs to have 18 gallons of gasoline in their car. They can do with it with 10.
Oh, I'm in fact, yeah. All electric cars, perhaps. That might be enough.
Well, no, electric cars are very dangerous. We need to ban electric cars, and we also need to ban automobile silencers. Those mufflers.
Oh, yeah.
Because a vehicle that has a muffler, a silencer on it, or an electric vehicle can stalk its prey silently. So we need to eliminate those. See, really what we need to understand, okay, let's look at some numbers. Last year, 37,461 people were killed on U.S. roadways. It's an astonishing number of Americans.
Let's
compare that to Great Britain. Great Britain has 1,792 motor vehicle deaths last year on British roadways. That's a stark contrast. 1,700 to close to 38,000. Now, I'm not saying we want to ban outright automobiles, but I'm just going to use, for an example, a country that has an outright ban on motor vehicles, the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. Do you know that as a result of having a ban on private ownership and utilization of motor vehicles in the DPRK, 7 people were killed? And those were mostly military injuries. So you can see that a ban, or at least significantly restricting access to these high-capacity assault death machines, really can do a significant amount of good in reducing the number of fatalities. I think we should also be able to sue the car manufacturers. That's another big one. And we have to realize that the organization, you know, I mean, like with the NRA with guns, AAA and NADA is to blame for all of these deaths. The National Automobile Dealers Association is an advocacy organization for dealers who sell these death machines to members of our society in public.
Wow, those bastards.
Now,
you know, really.
Wow. I talked to somebody the other day, and I'm kind of starting to subscribe to this line of thought here, that really the general public doesn't need automobiles. We have public transportation, we have trains, we have buses, we have bicycles, all of this stuff, thus the Moms Demand Bicycles organization that I've started. I really think that only cops should have motor vehicles, or public first responders should have motor vehicles, because, you know, when you go through the police academy, they teach you defensive driving tactics, and they teach you how to operate a vehicle at a high rate of speed. You know, there's no formal education that's required when you're a private citizen and you buy a car. You just have to pass a test and have the driver's license. But really, the driver's license is merely a suggestion, because from sea to shining sea across this country, tens of thousands of people operate motor vehicles with suspended or revoked driver's licenses.
Man, you're killing me. I love this.
I did a 20-minute monologue on this the other day with my show. I have taken every single anti-gun argument that the left throws at us, and I have put it in the context of motor vehicles as a result of what happened in New York. And when you look at this, people laugh. They go, that's the dumbest thing I've, I mean, they laugh at it, and they say, oh, that's great, it's satire. And how amazing is it that we can sit here and we can laugh and we can have a good chuckle and we can say how absolutely outlandish this is, but yet we apply these exact same arguments to firearms, and people believe this, and they swallow that Kool-Aid willingly. How sad and pathetic is that?
Very compelling, by the way. And Yeah, I knew where you were going. I would bet you had a number of people just kind of hanging on the edge of their chair, wondering, you know, if you were serious. And wow, what a very compelling argument. It's amazing when you think about it.
Yeah.
By the way, let me ask you this. Are your archives available for your show anywhere?
Yeah, if people go on facebook.com/KeithOnTheAir, okay. I usually post them. That one, unfortunately, I have not had it. Actually, I don't know if I did or not. I may have. You got to remember, I'm chief cook and bottle washer there. So, I mean, I'm literally doing everything. I'm producer, call screener, host, talent, coffee maker, dog taker router, guest greeter. So, you know, a lot of times at the end of the day when, I mean, my day started this morning at 4:45, and, I'll be lucky if I wrap up. As soon as I hang up with you, I've got to go write an editorial for a paper. So, you know, my day is typically starting at about 4:30, 4:45 and ending at about 11:30 at night. So, sometimes things fall through the cracks and keeping up with my archives is one of the things that I really need to be a little bit more diligent and self-disciplined about.
Well, we're going to, I got to tell you this. We had a little problem with our audio today, segmenting videos and audio. However, I think we have that problem resolved. That segment that you did, we are going to feature that prominently. And I'll send you a link to that because I really believe people need to hear that. And really, man, you hit that one out of the park. And I think that the argument there is well stated.
Well, and again, I mean, it's one of the things that, you know, that comes with being a critical free thinker and yep. being able to look at both sides of the argument. And this is what people who stand opposed to what you and I and Joe and your listeners, what we believe in, what we hold sacred and what we hold dear. This is what these people don't have the ability to do. And I believe really truly that if they actually had the ability to look at things critically, I think they would see the errors of their ways or at least open themselves up to having some of their viewpoints change. But again, it goes back to the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is the dumber you are, the more you believe that you have the greatest amount of knowledge. I mean, think about it. When you've taken a class or you've been in a lecture, you always have that guy. You know, you always have the expert in the room, and he's always got to assert himself. And he's usually the person that is the biggest bumbling idiot, but he's always going to assert that, you know, he knows more than everybody else, and he's got the greatest. You know, I think about it in the firearms classes. You know, I've had more ex-members of SEAL Team 6 walk through my door, and I say that, you know, facetiously, but it seems like everybody who ever walked through my door, you know, they were a ranger with SEAL Team Delta. You know, I love it when I get a person who would walk through the door and say, geez, you know, I really don't know a whole bunch about guns, but I'm here to learn. It's like, thank you, because you're not having your man card revoked if you come in and admit that, well, you know, I don't know a lot about this. But people always feel the need to state or overstate their achievements, overstate their knowledge, overstate their ability. And I think that's really what you're looking at when you're talking about these coddled millennials. They think they know everything. You know, they're being sent out into the world by college professors who are telling them, great, now you have your bachelor's degree in gender studies. Go out there and, you know, the world is just waiting for you to solve all their problems. You know, that was the birth of the Occupy Wall Street movement. That was the first wave of everybody gets a trophy, hitting the real world and realizing suddenly, wow, mediocrity doesn't even get you through the door.
Amen.
You know, there's no participation trophies in the real world. The real world is brutal. You know, people, I was talking with somebody the other day and they're like, well, I don't like hunting. Well, why don't you like hunting? Well, it's cruel to the animal. Really? Geez, most of the time when people are hunting, they dispatch the animal quite humanely and quickly. I don't know of too many animals that die of old age in their beds surrounded by loved ones slipping off into oblivion peacefully. It just doesn't happen.
I'm sorry, man. You're killing me here. Yeah, exactly. For some reason, my day starts early too, and in the office I had a believe it or not, a rerun of Lassie, because I couldn't take the news anymore. It was like 4:30 or something like that, and You just triggered thinking about the rerun of Lassie, and Lassie, you know, caring for a bird or whatever it was at the time. But yeah, you're exactly right. Wow. Okay. Yeah, and you, I can't wait for your book. So, man. Wow. All right.
I got to tell you, you know, the other day I was just kind of, I just had it. The totality of everything with news and politics and everything. I went to the, I slipped out. I went to the library. I sat in the library for 2.5 hours and I read, Beverly Cleary books. Remember Beverly Cleary, the author? She wrote, the Ramona and her sister Beezus, and then she wrote the Mouse and the Motorcycle series.
Oh my goodness!
The little mouse that befriends the kid Keith and has a toy motorcycle. And I sat in the library, and I must have read about 6 or 7 of those books. And for just 3.5 hours, I just slipped back into my childhood, and was it blissful? It really was, to be able to just shut the politics and the news and everything else off, and then just to sit there and read a book that I hadn't read since, you know, I was 10 or 11 years old. It was magic. It really was. I would really encourage people, if you have a chance, go to the library, pull some books you haven't read since your childhood, just sit there in the peace and quiet and read a good book, and man, I'll tell you, it will rejuvenate your spirit. It's great.
Amen to that. Anything to take away from the pressures and just the intensity of what we're seeing today.
Yeah.
Keith, I know you're a busy guy. We only have about 7 minutes left of the program. What haven't we covered that's on your radar that you kind of want to close with?
Well, I think to the best of my knowledge, we're going to be doing a regular segment together, aren't we?
I hope so. Yeah, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm kind of a little bit behind in my memos on that, but yes, okay. that's my understanding.
Yeah, John, you know, your producer had reached out to me and said, you know, would you be open to doing a regular segment with Doug and Joe? And I said, I would be honored and privileged to do that, absolutely. And so I think one of the things that we're really going to have to watch here, you know, I think the Manafort case, just kind of getting into some of the more serious politics here, I think that's a big nothing burger. I mean, it really is. You're talking about tax evasion and somebody who was spending lavishly on items that this is well before the Trump issue. And I think it's really interesting now to watch, you know, we were talking about the mainstream media earlier, watching the spin that they're putting. I think, to be honest with you, if I were Donna Brazile right now, I would be hiring a bevy of personal security guards because, you know, she's gonna wind up. I'm just wondering how long it's going to be before her suicide occurs.
There's a funny meme on the internet. It's a picture of Hillary Clinton holding a microphone, and underneath it says, "I'm sorry you decided to suicide yourself."
And yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah. We joke right, about it. 116 suspicious deaths over the course of Bill and Hillary Clinton's career. I mean, that's those numbers speak for themselves. I'm not saying that, you know. I would just say if I were Donna Brazile, boy, I'd tell you I would grow eyes in the back of my head. I would go into witness protection. But I think this is going to be really interesting. And what you're starting to see now, and even Elizabeth Warren came out in an interview with Jake Tapper, was talking about this. I think what you're going to see is some very, very high ranking Democrats now turning on Hillary. It's going to get really, really ugly. I mean, this could potentially be the end of this woman. I hope and I pray that this is the end of this woman because, you know, you've heard me expressing lamentations about this. She just will not go away. And, you know, this could be it. But I think this is going to be very interesting to see how the media spins. You know, this and everything that's coming out between Hillary Clinton rigging the DNC, certainly the Uranium One case, you know, the manipulation of American officials and Russian officials with Obama's knowledge. I mean, this just goes to show you the depths to which the Democrats will sink. And, you know, right after the election, right after the inauguration, Rahm Emanuel, the godfather himself, came out and said, Democrats have to stop worrying about being right and just worrying about winning. And that's what it is when you're a Democrat. A win is a win is a win by any means necessary. The ends will always justify the means. And so they're in a scramble right now to try to figure out, A, how they can repair this party, and B, whether or not they can actually offer up somebody who is even remotely politically viable for 2020. Because it just doesn't look good. It really does not look good for the Dems. And here's the thing, though. You know, it's like a cornered animal or a caged animal. The more they realize that their fate is being sealed, the more desperate they'll become. And it just kind of makes you wonder, like a caged animal, to what extent will they go to try to self-protect or preserve?
Yeah, you're precisely correct on this. And I'll be watching, by the way, I'll be watching carefully how this Brazil, or the reverberations from this Donna Brazil's assertions or allegations, how these play out. And I do agree with you. You're right. You know, she better stay away from the small aircraft. And
it'll be a heart attack. They'll find her on the bathroom floor, dead of a heart attack. That's my prediction, and I'm not joking about that. I'm serious. That's the way I would imagine how they would do it. She'll die of a perceived heart attack.
I got to tell you, it's rough to get dead people to testify, but
it's very rough.
And of course, given your experience, you know that. So,
Keith, do you really think that this will lead to any meaningful investigations, let alone indictments?
Well, I mean, if they're able to appoint a special counsel and look into it and take the matter seriously, then I think absolutely it could, and absolutely it should. I mean, you know, you've got Donna Brazil in essence coming out and saying that Hillary Clinton took over the campaign. You've got Elizabeth Warren coming out and saying that as a result of her taking over the campaign, she was able to basically launder millions of dollars worth of campaign money through the DNC. And so, you know, again, this is typical Democrat behavior, because they're going to do whatever they have to do to try to win. They're going to do whatever they have to do to advance their agenda and advance their candidates. And yeah, that's exactly what you saw with Bernie Sanders. I mean, Bernie Sanders, he would have won. Maybe not the presidency, but I mean, he absolutely would have won. He would have, if the playing field were level, Bernie Sanders would have been the nominee. And he would have gone up against Donald Trump. And I think it would have been fascinating to watch a guy who has basically, he was a professional couch surfer until he was 40 years old. Then he realized how he could enrich himself by suckling on the public teat. Here's a guy who has absolutely no private sector experience. He's never owned a business. He's never had a legitimate job outside of government. I think it would be absolutely fascinating to have him debate policies and economics with somebody like Donald Trump, who is a self-made multi-billionaire.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, you've done it. You've brought us to the end of our show, and I just cannot tell you what a fantastic hour this was with you. Keith Hansen, First Look with Keith Hansen, and the Keith Hansen Show, Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 and 9 to 10, respectively, in New Hampshire Heritage FM Morning Drive Talk Show. And of course, the show that follows that for the hour, and that's 99.7 FM WNTK New London, right? And
yep, and people can stream it online. Just go to WNTK.com, and they can certainly stream the show. There's the apps. Go to your iPhone or Android store. Just punch in WNTK into the search bar. You can download the app, take it on the go, and check the show out, be a part of it. And two television projects too coming up. So one of the two is launching in January. So
that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. And next time you come back, you're going to have to get into that. Tell us about that some more. We really appreciate your time tonight.
Be happy to.
All right, brother.
Keith, you took us right to the very end of the show. I want to thank you for joining us tonight, and you have a great weekend.
My pleasure, you guys. God bless, and to all of your listeners, have a great weekend. Have a safe weekend. We'll talk soon.
All right, my brother.
You too.
That was Keith Hansen. What a fantastic hour.
Folks,
that'll do it for us. I will be doing a show tomorrow on Doug Hagmann Radio Show. I don't know what time. I'll announce it via Twitter. Some special information tomorrow. Until then, until Monday, our flagship show. God bless and have a great day.